Hey folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It is the one and only, the Tornado Tony Pennicale, that's T-O-R-N-A-D-O. And Psychic Tom said, crystal ball's ready to go.
Alright, well we got to be like doing something opposite of the crystal ball this week, because we got 2 weeks to go backwards and cover events here.
Oh, great.
But
well, that's what I said in my psychic resume. I can go backwards and forwards. Either way,
what are you like Marty McFly?
There you go.
Okay, I'm going to start my car in a minute.
Okay. All right, so we had a couple events. Last weekend we had a Bellator event going up against a UFC event. We had not last weekend, but the weekend before, the Ultimate Fighter finale against Julia Budd versus Arlene Blumkow in Bellator. And then this past weekend we had Max Holloway versus Jose Aldo, which was a real unfortunate event for Jose. He definitely did not look good. And I really felt bad for the guy. I mean, obviously he wants to fight, he lives to fight, but he got his ass kicked bad. And it was not pretty. It was actually kind of embarrassing, you know, because it looked like a mismatch. And Jose is a lot better fighter, so I don't know whether his confidence was shot because he hadn't been in so long, or what the reason was, but he just didn't seem to be all there. Did you get to see that fight, Tom?
No, he's I believe, 31 years old, and it just doesn't seem possible that he's not older than that. I mean, he's been around for so long, and, you know, there's that cliche about being an old 31.
Yeah.
And, maybe it's, I mean, when you lose three out of your last four fights, and especially at the level he's been operating at for so many years, just pretty much unbeatable, maybe he's never recovered from the McGregor fight.
Possibly. And he's also been talking about...
Well, you know, your psyche gets bruised. I mean, that can be more damaging than any physical damage you get. You lose a fight like that, and it's like, you know, you're in there and you're flinching. And when you start flinching, you know, you're toast, you know? So, you're right. You know, like, some guys age rapidly. Boom Boom Mancini, perfect example. Barry McGuigan, those guys age rapidly. Meldrick Taylor. Now, Meldrick was a combination of, you know, the loss to Chavez, which was a very punishing loss, and then also having a fragile psyche after that fight. You know, he was never the same mentally or physically. Now, and he was only in his early 20s or mid-20s.
Right.
Because maybe the same thing with Jose Aldo.
Yeah. Well, and look at Mike Tyson. I mean, even Lennox Lewis said, had they fought 10 years before they did, no question about Mitchell probably would have pulled it off, but it's all about time out.
Oh, absolutely. And like that, Mike Tyson was so dominant at 20, 21 years old, and it was coming so easy to him, and then he had that loss to Buster Douglas, and then it was like, you know, in his personal life, Mike Tyson aged very fast. You know, even before he went to prison, if you go back and watch some of his fights with, like, you know, Razor Ruddock and those guys, he wasn't really throwing combinations anymore. He was throwing, you know, a single punch at a time. Then sometimes the body shot, then the uppercut. But he was loading up. He wasn't doing that faint, and then four punch combo anymore.
Right. I mean, yeah. Some of his fights, he'd come out, he'd miss, he was just almost like an ass, right? Say that. But,
yeah.
You know, he wanted a wild, like tough man punches, you know, like Earl Barr punch or something. And I don't think, you just never know what the loss of Diamato is.
Yeah, this was a great night for fights, actually. Good points by both of you, by the way. It was actually a nice co-main event, too, in this one, even though it was quick. Francis Ngannou will be gunning for your buddy Stipe next, Tom. And he beat Alistair Overeem with a nice uppercut hook uppercut. Unreal.
I think that was more of a shovel, a Jack Dempsey shovel. and your favorite fighter, Rich, that Kevin, he was calling it hook. That didn't look like a hook to me.
No.
It looked more like a call it shovel punch. So, Kevin got an interesting time to sleep, babe, because, you know, everyone's on the hype train, and maybe it's justified. Joe Rogan thinks that he's going to be the next big thing, but he also made the horrifying prediction that when Ronda Rousey got bored with beating everyone in...
Oh, you're cutting out there, Tom. You there?
But he has the power, but we'll see what happens. It's going to be a fascinating contest, and already Stipe is a slight underdog. Odds makers have come out already on it.
Well, there you go. Now you have an excuse to go to Vegas and put some money down. yeah, it's...
it's funny, too, because it seems like, and I think you guys will agree with me on this, that especially in boxing, if you remember before the Tyson Holyfield fight, people were talking about who was going to win. The question was, could Evander Holyfield come out of a slide? And when people start, this is just my anecdotal with this old man experience, but when people start talking like that a lot, sometimes you look to the other side of the equation, and we're hearing so much talk about it. I'm not saying that it couldn't happen again, but it's going to be a fascinating fight for sure.
I don't know, though. I think Alistair Overeem...
He's a freight train.
Overeem has shown in the past that he's been susceptible to using steroids for an unfair advantage. He's had a better kickboxing career than anything, I think, and he's had very mixed results in the UFC. He's on again, off again, and this time he just looked like he was just doing it for the money, and didn't really seem like he was very competitive. But I mean, you only got one minute and 42 seconds to judge him, so not much time. But
well,
either way.
Also remember, he's 37 years old, and he turned pro at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
And as Sean O'Grady said, I think he made the analogy about when his chin gave out against Andy Gannigan way back when, 81, I think, 81, 82 around that time. But like he said, you know, your chin can be like a cash register. You ring it up and ring it up and ring it up, and eventually it pops. Overeem, I think, has been on the downside, chin-wise. So, Nagano's looked great, don't get me wrong, but we'll see if he's going to be able to handle Stipe's mobility and see if Stipe can get it to the ground. I think there's so many fascinating questions, and it's going to go either way.
Well, I mean, both of these guys are strikers, too, and Stipe kind of has the advantage of being, understated. You know, he doesn't have that gigantic physique. He isn't, ripped. And he doesn't have huge reach. You know, he doesn't have long reach, but he just has these short punches with incredible power, and people have a tendency to try to underestimate him. And this guy Ngannou is obviously going to be able to outreach him, but is he going to be able to outmaneuver him and keep him from getting inside and landing those good shots? That's the question. So I'm looking forward to that. I really think Stipe's got a shot, but... Ngannou has never been out of the second round except for one decision that he lost. His only loss of his career was a two-round fight, and it was a unanimous decision for the other guy. But since then, he's never been out of the second round. So it just tells you every fight's been a stoppage. So it's pretty much guaranteed to be somebody's on the mat at the end of this one. So it's definitely going to be a fight.
You would think, and then of course that's the age-old question: if we get deeper water,
right?
As Ollie was talking about, form. The last time he heard round five, remember that little rant? Round seven, round nine, round 11, last round. And there you go. I mean, it's just another one of those questions, but. Stipe has got those short punches, and And I'll tell you that the one we have coming up next month was Cormier defending against the Vulcan.
The Vulcan neck pinch.
I
have heard of that. And big.
When you go back and you look at one of the greatest punches in boxing history, the Marciano knockout over Jersey Joe Walcott.
Right.
Beautiful.
Right.
Short punch, you know. He drove his whole body into it. But Rocky, for the most part, was like a windmill type of fighter, especially when he got a guy hurt. I mean, those punches came wide. They came from all angles.
And I just found out the Stipe versus Ngannou fight will be in Boston next year. UFC 220.
Really?
Yep. My buddy Paul is going to be coming all the way back from Utah for that one.
is there a date on it, Rich? Has it been signed yet?
It's just early 2018 is what they're putting out there on Facebook. I just actually automatically posted it, so I haven't read it. I just saw the posting. Yeah. So, I don't know whether that means January,
right.
February, what, but might be making a trip to Boston.
Well,
I'll have to buy tickets, so I don't think they'll give me press passes. Not yet. Yeah, for sure. Also, we had Henry Cejudo, Olympic wrestling medalist, gold medalist, beating Sergio Pettis, former guest of ours. back when he was a little prospect, very little known. Tony and I talked to him years ago. And Sergio was supposed to be the next best thing, next big thing, I should say, and couldn't hack it against the wrestling of Henry, so he lost a unanimous decision there. And then one of the biggest fights of the night.
A lot of moves in that fight.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one thing when somebody uses a lot of wrestling to their advantage, kind of like Demetrius Johnson. I mean, people don't like his fights either, but at least he mixes it up. You know, he doesn't do one thing all the time. And, you know, he's tried to work more on his striking. But Henry, pretty much 99% of his fighting is wrestling, so it is kind of boring to watch.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Now, I know you know what my description of it is.
Yeah, the F word, or wrestle fuck, right?
I just love it.
That's funny.
I didn't originate it, it's so appropriate.
Yeah.
Just wrestle fucking.
And Eddie Alvarez had quite the redemption fight in the fight before that. And Justin Gaethje was looking great when he was defending himself properly. But if you notice from the fight before that, most of the fight his hands were at his chest area or his waist. And this first part of this fight against Eddie, he had his hands right up by his face. So I said, oh, geez, you know, somebody corrected that in his training camp. That's good. You know, this might be good for him. And then slowly as the fight went on, wore on, his hands slipped down again. And no surprise, he got knocked out with a knee. But we talk about a chin. He just took everything but the kitchen sink before that happened.
I mean, and then at times it seemed like he was bending forward, almost looking down at the floor.
Yeah.
Bad defense. I knew, I was watching this, I was thinking about you, you're thinking, oh, God, look at his hands. I knew about that. And I believe he lost a tooth in that game.
Oh, I believe it.
I thought I seen that. Again, I had a long drive to that home, so I wanted to see that. So I don't, you know, the end of it's too sleepy, but I don't know if he did lose. It sure did look like something went flying after that game. But congratulations, Alvarez. What a great fight. What a comeback. Oh.
Yeah, that was another one that, I mean, I didn't feel bad for either guy, but I felt like, geez, you know, how many wars can guys like this take, you know, with the system that's in place where they don't have insurance for retirement, and you know, some of these guys like Eddie and Justin that might never be, you know, long-time title holders with all kinds of sponsorships. They might just be, you know, contenders for the rest of their careers. And you know, taking that kind of a punishment in a three-round fight, didn't even get to the end of the three rounds. It's just, it makes you feel like,
I know you've heard of Eddie Alvarez,
because he's your hometown guy. Of course, yeah, in fact, a friend of mine.
Well, see, then this fight would be like a Daniel Warren fight almost. I mean, I don't know if it elevated quite to that level, but it was just nonstop. I didn't see these guys slowing up.
No.
I mean, you kept thinking, man, and it was back and forth, you know, but I just felt that Eddie was taking control in the second round, and Gaethje just seemed to be, his fundamentals were just so bad. And he was asked before the fight, how long do you think you can last with that style? And he said, well, I don't plan on finding out. I hope to be out of here in a couple of years. Well, you know, how many fighters do we know that said that? I'm going to have a very short career. Well, really? How's it work out? I heard that from Saad Muhammad. Saad Muhammad said that in 1980. I remember hearing him say, well, you know, my career's going to be short. Well, really? How'd that work out for him?
And the ironic thing is, Justin was actually throwing a lot of leg kicks that damaged Eddie Alvarez's leg so bad, he was switching stances. And that's another thing I've always said that fighters need to start doing, taking out that lead leg as much as possible with kicks when they're at distance. Because not only does that actually weaken your opponent, but it gets fans into it when things are slow. Ooh, there's a nice kick. So, I don't know if he...
If he would have been able to continue
in a fifth-round fight.
Horrendous. And, you know, it's easy to sit and watch. Okay, why isn't Eddie checking those? But, again, things are happening so fast in there that, boy, he was eating a lot of... And when you see a guy switch stances, Eddie Alvarez is not a southpaw. on, though. When you see them switch stances, I don't know why he couldn't put up, but things happen fast, you know. But, great job for Alvarez. When he's right back.
Good stuff. And then we had Tony's namesake, the Tiny Tornado, Tisha Torres, beating Michelle Waterson.
We've got four T's. Talk about the alliteration. Yeah, what is it? Tisha, the Tiny Tornado Torres.
Yeah.
Four T's.
Well, the T's a very good letter. You know, it's a staple of the alphabet.
Yeah.
In fact, T is so popular. Watch Wheel of Fortune and do the final spin thing, T is one of those that automatically give you because it's so great.
That's also what Tony's going to name his first kid. The Tiny Tornado. And then we had an interesting fight with Paul Felder and Charles Oliveira. Oliveira was doing phenomenal in the first round, and then Paul Felder just absolutely took over in the second round and TKO'd him with some nasty elbows. And that
now,
just goes to show you.
There was another Philadelphia guy, Paul Felder. I think I may ask you that before. I think it was North Philly he was from. I was asking about that part of town. Is that a special part of town that you're making a big deal of it when it's promos?
Well, you know what, North Philly is a very tough part of the town. North Philly is like kind of by, where like Temple University is. North Philly is where the Blue Horizon was. North Philly is where Smokin' Joe's gym was. You know, North Philly is where Bukowskis was originally from. Front Street Gym, all that area. Pretty rough area.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll say this much about Paul. That first round looked horrible for him. What submission defense he had, because Oliveira is not new at getting submissions.
And if you didn't know your Oliveras, you would have think that Charles fought twice, but no, it was Alex Oliveira in the fight before. Also lost by TKO, so it wasn't good. Wasn't a good night for guys named Oliveira. But Yancy Medeiros.
That was a fight of the year candidate. Right?
Yeah, Yancy Medeiros was absolutely getting pasted all over the cage, and then just somehow started firing back. And so Alex probably was thinking he was going to win, and then he is out on the ground, TKO'd. So it was 2 minutes and 2 seconds into the third round, and it was definitely fight of the night. I don't know if they actually gave him performance of the night, but you know, compared to the Eddie Alvarez fight, it was a close decision there.
That was one of those fights that you hate to see anyone lose.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about leaving it in there,
It actually reminded me of the Pete Sell fight there, where he got punched in the gut. Pete Sell and Scott Smith. Pete came in and punched him in the gut, and Smith bent over, and then Pete got close, and he knocked him right out.
That was a movie. That was the kind of stuff that we see in a Rocky movie.
Yeah.
You never see that in a real fight. We've never seen it since.
Awesome stuff.
And I don't want to jump ahead of things, but I hope you're going to cover the Ultimate Fighter finale on Friday night.
Oh yeah, we'll go right back to that too.
And we're going to talk about that unique submission, the second one, if you want to see history. But I don't want to get ahead of them. Let you keep going.
Well, I'm going to try to run down the list quick here for the undercard fights, but I do have a couple comments on some of them. David Tamar beating Drakkar Close by unanimous decision. Nothing crazy there. Felice Herrig beat Courtney Casey Sanchez by split decision there. And neither one of those girls were very confident they were going to win that one. It was a close one. Not a lot of action to score one way or the other as a favorite, but Felice got the win by split decision. And then we had ABC, Amanda Bobby Cooper, beating Angela Magana by TKO in the second round, 4 minutes and 34 seconds in. And Amanda said some pretty mean things after this fight, basically that Angela does not belong in the UFC. She needs MMA more than MMA needs her. And, you know, obviously, Magana has a little bit of a controversial background with the incident at the Fighter Summit where she got punched by, what's her name, Cyborg. Chris Cyborg there. And one of the funniest things I've ever seen on Twitter was a meme they put out there. You guys have obviously heard of Elf on a Shelf, right? The little elf that you put a picture, take pictures of him in all kinds of crazy places. Well, somebody came up with another one that rhymes, and it was Angela Magana standing on a rolled marijuana blunt. So you can imagine what the rhyme with blunt is. For a woman that people don't like, cunt on a blunt. Oh, it was hilarious. And they didn't even explain it. You know, they just put the picture up there, and you had to guess. And you know, it only took me a minute. But yeah, that was pretty funny. Also, Abdul Razak Al Hassan beat Sabah Homasi by TKO in the first round. 4 minutes and 21 seconds into that one. And we had Dominic Reyes beating Jeremy Kimball by rear naked choke. 3 minutes and 39 seconds into the first. And first fight of the night was actually a pretty vicious knockout. I didn't see it, but I did notice a lot of people talking about it online. Justin Willis KO'd Alan Crowder. And they look like heavyweights, but it doesn't say the weight on here. I think they were. And before we make this whole show about MMA, I would like to take a detour into boxing here. We also had last Saturday Miguel Cotto hanging it up with a tough loss against Saddam Ali. I did not get to see that one. That was actually...
I didn't get to see either. All the reports that I've heard that Cotto was winning the first few rounds and then he hurt his arm.
Yeah.
And then he tore my bicep, is that what it was?
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the same night that the UFC and Bellator were having competing events, December 1st. The boxing match between Cotto and Ali got something like 945,000 viewers at their peak. And the UFC at that peak, there was one particular fight on the card that was pretty crazy. I think they got like 600,000. So boxing won again. And then, of course, football.
Cotto has that big Puerto Rican following. They're loyal to their fighters, for sure.
Very true.
Was it? Yeah, it was. It was pretty crazy. But they're doing it again this week. Bellator's on a Saturday, and UFC's on a Saturday. Obviously, it's going to be different time zones though, because UFC's in Italy, Tony. It's in your home.
My home
country.
We might have an Italian middleweight champion in Bellator.
Mm-hmm. Or is it the Bellator one's in Italy? Sorry, not UFC. Yeah, Rafael Carvalho taking on Alessio Sicara in the main event. We'll get to that whole schedule a little bit later. I also wanted to mention on the 25th of November, we had Sergey Kovalev getting back in the ring, beating Vyacheslav Shabransky pretty handily. I believe it was a knockout.
Yeah,
and I forget where it was, but there was a story reminded me a little bit about Tommy Morrison there. There was a story that in some jurisdiction they had a fighter allowed to fight with HIV positive status. So it was not good for that commission. That happened. No, it was another fight, another area. I forget what it was, but it's been in the news this week. I'll look it up and get to it a little later. And we got a lot of fights coming up this weekend, Saturday. I'm going to run through that schedule here. Sure, we got a Jesus fight somewhere. And a mismatch of the week. There's one, we're going to go over that one. A lot of big names on that card. Where's the good stuff? Over in Russia, we got a decent WBA International Super Middleweight title fight. Fedor Chudinov, 15-2, fighting Ryan Ford, who's 14-0 there. And then we got another title on the line. I don't know how this happens, but the vacant WBA International Super Flyweight title is on the line between a guy named Hermogenes Elizabeth Castillo. I don't know how you got Elizabeth as a middle name when you're a guy, but he's 12-0.
You better be tough.
Yeah, right? I guess that's why he took up boxing. he's fighting Mikhail Aloyan, and even though he's undefeated, he's only 2-0, and he's fighting for an international title. How's that? That's how they do things in Russia.
Wow.
And then we've got, of course, fighting going on in the United Kingdom. This one is actually being streamed for free on Showtime. Streamed for free. Actually, we got a link on our website to the stream. But it's the whole card, basically. Lee Selby in the headlining bout, IBF World Featherweight title. He is 25-1, fighting Eduardo Ramirez, who's undefeated with 20 wins, 0 losses, and 3 draws. And then we got James DeGale fighting for the IBF World Super Middleweight title. He is 23-1-1, fighting Caleb Truax, who is 23-2.
And I've enjoyed watching Truax. That's a pretty good fighter there.
Yeah, this might be one I'll actually watch because it's free. But we also have Anthony Yard, 13-0, fighting Nikola Shjekola. Shjekloka, I guess. He is 32-4-1, so obviously experience versus youth and talent there. This one's for two titles, WBO European Light Heavyweight title and WBO Intercontinental Light Heavyweight title. I'd like to know the difference between Intercontinental and International. What is the deal there? Why do you need two titles? Joe Mullender also on the card. Joe Mullender is 10-2, fighting Lee Churcher, who is 13-3-1. Holy crap. Christian Leitz fighting this weekend, too. And he's looking to get his 261st loss. He's 260-8, fighting Connor Parker, who's 5-0, soon to be 6-0.
Okay, now you said that record was 12-260-8?
Yes.
eight draws?
Eight draws.
Is that right?
Yeah. No surprise he's lost his last six fights.
Boy, imagine those 12 guys, how many ones did he beat?
Yeah.
Wow. What if they're getting new locations?
Yeah, we're going to create a whole new show called The Biggest Loser, but it's already been taken. And then this one I wish I could be at, but I can't. This one's actually going to be in Hampton, New Hampshire this weekend. Our former guest Ryan Kilzweski is on the show. He's 26-3. Chris Trietti, a guy that grew up in my hometown of Quincy. Well, not hometown, but went to high school there. And I could have got into that one. I could have made a phone call and got there, but just didn't get around to setting it up. But if they ever come up here to Laconia or Guilford, where they have the big outdoor venue, I'd love to get up to there. But we don't have their opponents, Triedi and Kilzweski, because apparently it's BoxRec hasn't caught up with it. But I do believe I've got a couple blogs out about this one with the opponents' names on. So if you want to know about that, just check the site. And then, of course, HBO's got to compete with Showtime. So they've got an event out at the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. Main event, Tevin Farmer, 25-4-1, fighting Kenichi Ogawa, 22-1, for the vacant IBF World Super Featherweight title. And then Orlando Salido, still fighting, 44-13-4 is his record, fighting Miguel Roman, who is 57-12. Yikes. Then Francisco Vargas on the card, 23-1 with two draws, fighting Steven Smith, who's 25-3. Dennis Shafikov, 38-3-1, fighting Rene Alvarado, who's 27-8. And we got Jamie Munguia, 25-0, fighting Paul Valenzuela Jr., who is 20-6. And if that ain't enough, we got another couple undefeated guys. Emilio Sanchez, 15-0, fighting Sergio Frias, who is 19-8-2. And then Pedro Duran, 15-0-2, fighting the ever dangerous TBA. Watch out.
I had a busy year of that TBA.
Yeah, it's everywhere. I think he fights every night. also,
shape he must be in. He never seems to have to rest.
Right. And then we got Madison Square Garden Theater hosting a big Bob Arum fight here. And there's actually a lawsuit that's been filed over this fight, which we'll get to in a minute. But it's going to be on ESPN. Main event is Vasily Lomachenko, 9-1, fighting Guillermo Rigondeaux, who's 17-0. And it's for the WBO World Super Featherweight title. And also Christopher... Oh, go ahead, Tony.
That's a very interesting matchup because you have two fighters that are just so supremely talented, great amateur backgrounds, virtually untouchable in there. Now, Lomachenko is a bigger man physically. They're on par with their amateur credentials. Rigondeaux obviously had more professional fights, but you can't really say he's an exciting fighter. Well, Lomachenko is a little bit more exciting, and I think that's what's going to put the difference here, is Lomachenko is a little bit more offensive, and I think it's going to be close, it's going to be sometimes ugly, and not ugly quite long and clinching all that, it's going to be ugly, but it's two guys that are going to have a hard time taking the heat in there.
That's the fear if it becomes a snooze fest, and it has every possibility of doing that, because they're so good.
Well, I don't think anybody in the history of boxing.
Not
I don't think anybody in the history of boxing taken on the talent level in their first 10 fights that Lomachenko has taken on. I mean, just unreal. And I mean, his third fight, he's taken on a guy who's 24-0. Next fight, 51-1. And he lost to a guy in his second fight, the guy we just talked about, Orlando Salido. 41-12-2 was his record, lost by split decision. That's his only loss.
But you look at his amateur background, though. How many amateur fights did he have? 400 or something? I mean, it's quite a...
Well, you figure Lomachenko was supposedly 396-1, and Rigondeaux was like 100 some and like 12.
I don't know if you know this, Tony, but... I'm looking at BoxRec right now, and for some reason they've got stars next to people's names, asterisks. I wonder what that's all about, because there's no, like, footnote at the bottom that explains it. But for instance, I clicked on Shabransky from the Kovalev fight, and they've got his opponent first on the list here, Sergey Kovalev, and there's an asterisk. It's weird. What the fuck do they mean by that? And the same for Rigondeaux on Lomachenko's record. I don't know what that's all about. But co-main event there, Christopher Diaz, 21-0, fighting Bryant Cruz, who's 18-2. That's for the vacant WBO, NABO Super Featherweight title. And then another one worth watching, Bryant Jennings, 20-2, fighting Don Hainsworth, who is 13-1-1. Let's see what else we got going on. Alright, that's pretty much it for Saturday. Alright, so let's go back to Ultimate Fighter finale. And this one was pretty much a dud for the UFC. Actually, it was the lowest rated show on Fox Sports in the history of their agreement with the UFC. So it goes to show you.
You're talking about the weekly ratings?
The viewership, basically, for this one event.
Oh, just this one event on Friday night. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, Bellator's was slightly more watched. But the big one was college football.
A lot of people didn't seem to know that the finale was on Friday night because they did that thing with, you know, two nights in a row.
Yep.
And even some of the in-crowd at the place I went, some of those guys didn't know about it. Because I wanted to talk about that unique submission that occurred. So we'll get to that in a second. That's interesting.
Yep. And we had a lady I met out in Worcester in the main event. She got bumped up to the main event because Sajara there could not make weight. She had she had to be hospitalized, I believe. So obviously probably a weight cut issue. But it just made me think about how different the Ultimate Fighter is now compared to when it first started. You know, these guys were ready to walk out of the freaking house in episode or season one. And, you know, that's where you get the famous Dana White speech, do you want to be an effing fighter? But, you know, nowadays these guys have no excuse to leave. Everything is prepared for them. They have the UFC Performance Institute in town they can go to when they have little nagging injuries and get special treatment. And it's very different from when it first started. You know, I'm not knocking fighters for going to get treatment, but it's like, you know, completely a 180 from the first season when these guys didn't even want to cut weight multiple times. Now they got no excuse. But they actually, the last episode with Sajara, she went to the Performance Institute to figure out the smartest way to cut her weight. And they actually did like this big study thing. They had a graph up and they showed her where her hydration level was. And, you know, and they were like, well, you know, you're kind of up in the lower area for dehydration, so you are a little bit dehydrated, but you have some that you can work with here. You're not at the critical level. So, I mean, it's just with weight cutting being such a concern and it being talked about, you know, more people are going to die if they don't do something. It's definitely a big help for these guys to be, and girls obviously, to be able to go to this institute and work on stuff like that. But then the problem is, like the one guy we had on the show. So yeah, it's great if you're in Las Vegas, but you know, when she goes back home and she doesn't have that there for her all the time, you know, then she's going to try to cut weight in a situation where she doesn't have the best information. So it's a catch 22. But anyway, main event was Nico Montano beating Roxanne Modafferi, and Montano only has a 4-2 record professionally. But Modafferi obviously had the experience coming in, 21-14-0. And she just looked like she couldn't put it together. Like, it kind of reminded me of Clay Guida when he fought Gray Maynard and was all herky-jerky and flinching and making weird movements and just trying to stay away from the main contact. And Roxanne, I mean, she wasn't that bad. There weren't boos or anything, but she just couldn't get the, you know, the decent punches in on exchanges, and she seemed to be fighting flat-footed a lot, not planting her feet. So, I mean, she's improved in a lot of areas, but I think her boxing really needs some fundamental revamping there, because she just didn't seem to have any power on those shots. And she can land shots. She has a nice jab. She's always throwing it out there, but it's just, there's something about her mechanics that's off. And that's unfortunate, because she made such a good improvement.
And then the obvious question, at her age, with her experience, how much evolution is going to happen now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she went from a girl on the show that was just kind of one and done to a girl that was number one in the next season that she was on. So she's obviously shown that she can improve, but it's just that power factor,
yeah,
I think, that's her one weakness.
She was at one of the events out there in Las Vegas when I was covering it, so I spent some time talking to her, because I should have got her number, put her on the show, but that's the way it goes. She's just not quite there. Just a day late and a dollar short.
Yep. Yeah, the fight that I saw her at was in Worcester, and she actually ended up getting knocked out by a slam. And it was another girl on the last episode that, or last season that she was on, not this season, but it was that same girl that was on the same season with her that slammed her, knocked her out. But I remember going up to shake her hand, and like, she had the weakest handshake. You know, not that females are you know, known for their tough handshakes, but yeah, she was just like very gracious, very, very friendly. Nice girl. Anyway, co-main event, Sean O'Malley beat Terrion Ware by unanimous decision. And then we had Barb Murphy. No, Lauren Murphy, often called Barb, much to her dismay. Oh, it was funny.
They covered that last night.
Yeah, because
that mistake was made on the show.
Yep.
And Cormier may have had a Freudian slip up there saying, okay, I can't call her Barb. I can't call her Barb. And what is he doing?
Yeah.
Well,
what originally happened was she's upset with Eddie. You know, she doesn't like the way things are going on her team. She lost her fight. So, you know, she started some controversy by jumping into the sauna right when Sajara had her issue with weight and had to cut more. So she's got an hour to cut. And then not only Lauren Murphy, but other fighters are trying to get ready just in case she doesn't make weight. but Sajara comes into the sauna and she's just like, get the hell out of here. And they didn't scuffle or anything, but it was just like, you know, totally bad attitude about the whole thing. And anyway, what ended up happening was Lauren Murphy came up to Eddie Alvarez and said, listen, I want to join the other team. I'm just not liking the way that this is going. So Eddie's like, all right, fine, you know, no big deal. Go ahead, go to the other team. And then he goes back into the dressing room and he says, hey, Barb's going to the other team. And she's like, my name is Lauren. And then after the fight, she wins, and Daniel Cormier says, oh, great job in there, Barb, or something like that. She goes it again, my name is Lauren!
I agree with that, Bob, that he really didn't mean to do that, but he was trying so hard not to do it. Sometimes if you try too hard, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was funny.
And Cormier put out an interesting tweet on that.
I haven't.
Quite a makeup on there.
Nuts. And we had Gerald Meerschaert beating Eric Spicely from a kick to the body. That was a nice one. I did notice that.
Oh, that was brutal. That was brutal.
Vicious.
I felt that. A kick, those liver kicks. Oh, God. I felt that one.
That was in the second round, 2 minutes and 18 seconds in. And we had a draw, a very rare draw, in the seventh fight of the night. Deanna Bennett and Melinda Fabian, majority draw. Brett Johns in the fight before that beat Joe Soto by calf slicer. I'm sure that's the submission you're talking about. I did not watch
that. You know, that is the second one in the history of the UFC. And you know who got the first one?
Dominic Cruz? I don't know.
Charles Arnold Rivera.
Oh, there you go.
Okay? And it's very difficult if in your training regimen you ever had someone turtle on you. That's where it usually would come from when we work on it. I always wanted to do that. I could never do it in the gym. It's a very hard submission to pull. And it hurts. Believe me. Because we would, you know, when we were working on it, of course you're allowing your opponent to get it. But I just thought, my God, what do you do if you're caught in that? Now, there's also a bicep slice, and that's illegal Brazil, one of my trainers was saying, in Brazil, anything goes with that. Guys are doing it, there aren't, and it was the same idea. And it's an excruciating hold. I couldn't believe this guy, and this guy's from Scotland, of all places. He's catching up pretty quick. European grappling, on the move.
Yeah. And we had Montana De La Rosa beating Christina Marks by armbar 2 minutes into the first round. Ryan James beating Andrew Sanchez by TKO, and that was 58 seconds into the third round.
Okay. Yeah, that was another one. This was entertaining, Tony. This guy's idea, this Ryan James guy's plan was to take as many punches as I can. And your hand's going to get sore, and my head's going to be okay. And even in the first round, listen, Cormier was screaming, "Oh, it's over! Stop it! Stop it!" And somehow this James guy, I mean, what willpower he had. I don't know how long his career is going to be going either, but wow! I mean, that was just an example. Sanchez just lose what? I mean, he just couldn't finish the job.
Credit
kept going. Hey, Scott Mee is a fan. I
want
to see him again for sure.
Right. We have Rachel Ostovich versus Karine Gevorgyan. Ostovich won by armbar submission. 1 minute and 40 seconds.
Great pronunciation, Rich.
All right.
Good job, buddy.
And I didn't even watch the fight to get Bruce Buffer's angle on But
I believe... Yeah, maybe you could get one of those jobs, but you need a special coat like Buffer gets. I don't know where it gets those sparkle coats. You know.
Yeah.
Try that out in my neighborhood biker bar. Walk in there with that.
That's funny. Ostovich, I believe, was the girl on the show, on The Ultimate Fighter, who was... dressing like a model half the time, and absolutely the most attractive girl on the show, but not as good a fighter as the ladies who made the finals. But they put her on the card, and it might have been beauty over talent in that area. Forget her that opportunity, but she did all right on the show. But she got an armbar submission there. Then Shanna Dobson beat Ariel Beck by TKO in the second round, 2 minutes and 53 seconds into that one. Jillian Robinson beat Emily Whitmire by armbar in the first round, 2 minutes and 12 seconds into that one. And then the Bellator card that was on the same night in Oklahoma, main event there, Julia Budd beating Arlene Blenkow again, this time by split decision. Last time it was majority decision. And Bud improves to 11-2. Blenkow goes down to 10-7 there. Co-main event was Rafael Lovato Jr. versus Chris Honeycutt. Also unanimous decision win for Rafael Lovato Jr., but it was unanimous for him. And this whole main card was unanimous decisions, so I don't know. It wasn't very exciting, but definitely some good fights. Chidi Njukwani beat Hisaki Kato. David Rickles beat Adam Petalotti. All these unanimous decisions. And Stephanie Geltmacher beat Kai Bennett as well by unanimous decision. And on the undercard fights, we actually had some stoppages. Brian Grinnell beating Kemiel Haley by armbar. No, just submission, it says. 39 seconds into the first round. Chris Williams beat Thomas Lopez by triangle choke, also in the first round, 1 minute 39 seconds in. We had Sam Cecilia beating Marcos Galvo by unanimous decision. I wasn't even aware that Sam was in Bellator now. But Juliana Velasquez also got a submission, armbar, 32 seconds into the second round over Na Liang. Brandon Phillips beat Jordan Howard by unanimous decision. Mandel Nalo beat Alec Williams by head kick in the first round, knockout. 18 seconds in. That's good. Gaston Bolanos beat Rick Gutierrez by spinning back elbow knockout in the first round, 1 minute and 12 seconds into that one. In the first fight of the night, Andrew Parker beat Franklin Patterson by triangle choke submission. 3:03 into that first round. And now this weekend we've got two competing or Bellator and UFC on the same day, probably not the same time because Bellator is in Italy, but the Fresno, California UFC fight is fight night 123, Swanson versus Ortega. Brian Ortega comes in 12-0 undefeated. Cub Swanson comes in at 25-7. And I think either way this one goes, I would love to see a rematch with Cub Swanson and Jose Aldo to really see if Jose can put it all back together here at some point, because I'm sure Cub wants it more than anybody. So that was an embarrassing loss for him. Talk about 18 seconds. I think that's how long that one took, too. Co-main event, Jason Knight, 20-3, taking on Gabriel Benitez, 19-6. We got Aljamain Sterling, 14-2, fighting Marlon Moraes, who is 19-5-1. Scott Holtzman, 10-2, fighting Daryl Horcher, who's 13-2. Eric Anders, 9-0, fighting Marcus Perez Eckenberg, who is also 9-0. Benito Lopez, 8-0, fighting Albert Morales, 7-2, with one draw. Liz Carmouche back in action. She is 11-5, fighting Alexis Davis, who's 18-7. Luke Sanders, 11-1, fighting Andre Sukumfath, who is 11-5. Alex Perez, 18-4, fighting Carl's John DeThomas, 6-1. Frankie Sands, 11-5, fighting Marab Divalishvili, who is 7-2. Yuri Alcantara, way down on this card, third fight of the night, 34-8 is his record, fighting Alejandro Perez, who's 18-6-1. Not sure why he's so far down the card. Second fight of the night, Chris Rutzemacher, 13-2, fighting Davey Ramos, who's 6-2. And then this has got to be the best records of a first fight on Bellator in a long time. Antonio Braga Neto, who is 9-2, fighting Trevin Giles, who is 10-0. And then we got the Bellator card, which is very small. They must have a kickboxing event going on with this, because usually they don't have just these, well, it looks like five fights. Oh, maybe they don't have the other ones listed, because they're probably all locals, because the first one, or the bottom one on this list, is got the number 8 next to it. So that's got to mean the eighth fight of the night. But anyway, that one is Gregory Babine, 18-11, fighting Tony Zanko, who's 1-4. That might be our mismatch of the week there. Mihail Nika in the next fight, 6-0, fighting Carlos Leal Miranda, who's 10-3. Then we got Lina Ovchinnikova, 12-4, fighting Mary Rouse Mejia, who is 1-0. Well, that's a mismatch. 12-4 and 1-0. And then the co-main event is Brandon Gertz versus Luka Jelcic. Gertz is 14-7, Jelcic is 10-2. Main event is Rafael Carvalho, 14-1, versus Alessio Sakara, who is 19-11. So, that's pretty much it for the events. I don't know if you guys got anything else you wanted to mention, but I do have one more story I wanted to talk about. There is Diego Sanchez is in the news for all the right reasons for once. He actually got a loss that everybody can appreciate. He made friends with a guy with Down syndrome. Isaac the Shermanator Marquez, whatever that means. But they struck up a friendship when they met at Jackson Wink MMA Academy in Albuquerque. And Marquez is 32 years old, and I did not know this, but apparently most people with Down syndrome don't live past 45. So Marquez was actually aware of this, and became friends with this guy, and he came to the gym and ended up training there. And so Sanchez actually set up a match in Albuquerque with this guy, and ended up losing by armbar. It was obviously on purpose that he lost, but incredible thing for him to do for a guy with a disability like that. And, so kudos to Diego for that. Class act. Other than that, there's really not a whole heck of a lot to talk about. Unless you guys got something to add?
No, nothing else.
All right. Well, it was good catching up, and I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving. And we will be back. We will be back next week with an action-packed show, I'm sure. And we'll catch up then.
All right, guys. Next week, and let's enjoy the fights. Lots of them this weekend.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Have a good weekend, gentlemen.
Thanks for stopping by.